January, Gladiator Mania swept the nation.
Because when the world of ballroom and the world of celebrities collide, anything can happen.
Now, The Biggest Loser returns with contestants from all 50 states.
Coming to CBS this fall, Survivor Gabon.
The new 90210. Knight Rider returns to NBC.
That's just a small selection of shows you'll be seeing on your television set this fall, all of which seem to beg the question, and I'm going to do it in the voice of those announcers, is television as we know it dead? Or perhaps, given what we've just heard, should it be dead? Entertainment Weekly's columnist Mark Harris has written a piece on the current state of television called Saving TV in the September issue of Condé Nast Portfolio, and I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
You write that at the end of last season, ABC, CBS, and NBC reported their smallest combined audience ever. What do you think contributed to that?
Well, I think the primary thing is not that the networks are doing anything terribly wrong, but that there is so much more competition. Most households have cable now. Most households have more cable channels than they've ever had before. And, you know, it's funny to talk about the end of TV as we know it because it sort of depends on who the we is. If you're 35 or younger at this point, you didn't grow up in a TV universe where it was only about the big three networks and everything else was kind of hard to find and on the fringe. I think for an increasing portion of the audience that watches TV, there is no meaningful distinction between a traditional network and a basic cable network or a pay cable network. They go where their particular favorite shows are, and the network's dominance or primacy is no longer a given.
So although TV watching per day per household reached an all-time record last year, it's spread out over a lot of different cable systems and traditional television systems. Does cable now have a larger viewership than the networks?
Cable overall does have a larger viewership, at least in prime time, which has always been, you know, what the networks use to really define themselves than the networks do. And I don't expect that to change at all. The question is, I guess, how much smaller does the combined share of the three networks get before they're really indistinguishable in terms of their audience from some of the larger basic cable channels like TNT or USA.
Well, do you think that the decline of network TV's ratings has more to do with poor content or this increased competition from cable and other media?
You know, it's tempting to say that it's poor content, but I don't actually think that's true, especially since some of the very highest rated individual cable networks are the ones whose programming is most like the broadcast networks. When you watch something like USA, which has a lineup that's partly composed of reruns from broadcast networks and partly composed of dramatic and comedy shows that look an awful lot like what you would see on NBC or CBS, you realize that it's not network television per se that's being rejected. It's just that with 300 channels to choose from, or even 100 channels to choose from, why would you only choose three over and over again? Especially since a lot of these little cable networks have done a beautiful job at branding themselves and defining themselves as being very specifically for one audience. If you turn on ESPN or Bravo or the Sci-Fi Channel, you know exactly what you're going to get, and none of those kind of niche cable networks need a very big audience to survive. They just need a loyal audience that will come back to their shows over and over and over.
Well, wasn't cable originally supposed to feature narrow casting, and then to compete, they broadened the scope, and now they've returned to the niche strategies?
I think that's true, and you know, I think we also live in a niche universe. The idea that networks have that may be outmoded is that there's a kind of niche programming that serves its purpose, but that there's also a sort of general interest programming that appeals to everyone. The TV watching population now is so diversified and so specific in its interests and so able to find whatever appeals to them that unless you have really either an event like the Olympics or the Super Bowl that just brings a mass number of people across all demographics together, or a really shocking news event, there's no longer any reason for everybody to tune into a network.
So did NBC return to the old kinds of ratings with the Olympics?
Well, yes. I mean, it's sort of funny that we're talking about the death or at least serious illness of network television at a moment when NBC can boast something like 208 or 210 million viewers of at least part of the Olympics coverage. But, you know, as anyone who watched the Olympics knows, NBC used those 2 weeks really to heavily promote its lineup of new fall shows. And it'll be very interesting to see whether that actually carries over and has any beneficial effects for the primetime lineup of a network that has struggled in recent years. Because I think what's more likely to happen is people got what they wanted out of NBC, namely the Olympics, and that now that the season is beginning, you know, they're not easily fooled. They don't just sit on a channel because two or three weeks ago that channel had something they liked on it. They don't even sit still for a half hour if they're not interested.
But NBC also put some of the Olympic events on its cable networks, MSNBC and others, and pretty much all of the major cable networks are owned by the same conglomerates that own the major traditional networks. ABC owns Lifetime, for example. Then Disney, of course, owns ABC. So advertisers might be spending their cash in a different channel, but isn't the money all going to the same place?
You know, that's really true. It may be an individual concern to say the head of primetime programming for NBC that his audience is getting pecked to death by cable. But, you know, for the head of NBC Universal, which also owns USA and the Sci-Fi Network and MSNBC and Bravo and a piece of arts and entertainment, yes, the money is all flowing into the same coffers, ultimately. And NBC has been particularly shrewd about using these kind of cross-platform opportunities to send people toward their flagship brand, which is NBC, whether it's on a big scale like the Olympics or a much smaller scale where a show like Project Runway on Bravo will use Brooke Shields, the star of the NBC show Lipstick Jungle, as a special guest star, or have the contestants design an outfit for Olympians. I mean, there's a lot to be gained by this kind of diversification if a company is smart about it.
And Chris Matthews airs Saturday Night Live parodies of him on his MSNBC show. Of course, Saturday Night Live is on NBC, the parent company. But in the competition, couldn't it be argued that cable success does have something to do with the fact that it can get away with more, especially when it comes to sexual content? Even something like Mad Men, which is we might call PG-13, is not the same as the sort of thing that you would see on one of the three major networks.
That's probably true, although I think there's an increasing question as to why. You know, it's hard for me to imagine any of the networks, the broadcast networks, showing something like, you know, the unedited version of The Sopranos. But with a show like Mad Men, you really wonder whether one of the broadcast networks would really risk an FCC battle over indecency if they went as far as Mad Men does. I sort of doubt it. I think the reason that Mad Men isn't on a network, one reason is because it's a huge success for American Movie Classics, which airs it, by pulling in about 1 million viewers per episode, but that's nowhere near the level that it would need to reach to survive on a broadcast network.
My guest is Mark Harris, who has written a piece for Condé Nast Portfolio called Saving TV. You write that in the world of television, the business of wanting everyone has never been worse. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that we've seen so many networks, you know, target specific audiences with such great effectiveness. You know, the Disney Channel, which is the top basic cable channel of any kind, can really create a blockbuster for its audience with something like High School Musical. If you want cable news, there's CNN. If you want cable news with maybe a slightly more liberal tilt, there's MSNBC. If you want a conservative tilt, there's Fox News. If you want everyone, you probably increasingly have to face the fact that everyone has gone off and found things that they specifically like. There are very few shows that I can even imagine that are capable of pulling together a huge audience. And that's not because the networks are suddenly failing in their mission. That's because you know, they were the only game in town for so long. There was no place else to go, so of course shows could get an audience of 40 or 50 million people.
But they still continue to make the same kinds of shows. For example, NBC's fall lineup includes 30 Rock and a remake of Knight Riders and The Biggest Loser. It sounds to me like they're casting a fairly wide net with something for everyone.
I think they are, and I think there's a real question as to whether, you know, an audience that tunes into a serialized weight loss competition reality show like The Biggest Loser is going to stick around for a very sophisticated urban comedy like 30 Rock, just because both of those shows happen to be branded NBC shows. I don't think there's any brand loyalty to traditional networks, and I think there actually is some to small cable networks. I think when you turn on Fox News or the Disney Channel or Bravo, you know what you're going to get, and there's a certain environment where you're not, you know, not only what you're going to get in the show that you're watching, but you know that the show after that will be just like it.
And that probably pleases advertisers because they can reach a very specific demographic.
Yes, it pleases advertisers, and it's also extremely cost-effective, because what many of these basic cable networks do is they come up with a handful of signature shows. You know, for Bravo, it's Project Runway and Top Chef. For a network like FX, it's The Shield and Rescue Me. And they run them over and over and over again so that eventually a single episode of one of those series can aggregate a very large audience. They fill out the rest of their schedule with reruns of other shows. So compared to the networks, which are really producing a vast amount of original programming every week, these basic cable networks produce very little original programming, promote it endlessly, rerun it endlessly, build brand loyalty by rerunning it, and don't have to spend very much money to do it.
Yeah, in fact, something like AMC's Mad Men marathons is a perfect example of that. You can't imagine any of the major networks doing something like that.
No.
Let's come back to that. My guest is Entertainment Weekly columnist Mark Harris, who's moonlighted with a piece on the current state of television called Saving TV for the September issue of Condé Nast Portfolio. And we will continue our conversation right after this. We're back with Mark Harris of Entertainment Weekly. He's written an article called Saving TV for the September issue of Condé Nast Portfolio. And we're talking about whether TV can be saved or whether it actually needs to be saved. There's a piece in today's New York Times, Mark, about how many of the shows on this fall schedule are barred from foreign TV, mostly English sitcoms and Japanese game shows. Does that suggest a paucity of ideas in this country?
I'd rather look at it optimistically and say that it suggests a willingness to look beyond the traditional places that networks have survived by looking at for a long time. I mean, this isn't an entirely new thing. You know, in the 1970s, shows like All in the Family and Sanford and Son, as this article points out, were based on British formats. But it is becoming more pervasive, and I think it's a smart move for the networks because, you know, what networks basically rely on are a bunch of formats that have been around for, in some cases, literally 40 and 50 and 60 years, daytime soap operas, late-night talk shows, early morning news and chat shows. And, you know, some of those formats really, at this point, seem to have outlived their audience. You know, daytime soaps, for instance, it's a very expensive thing to produce 250 hours a year of a show with a large cast that a very small audience watches. Those shows were invented when women were barely in the workforce, and you know, now the world has kind of passed them by in some ways. So I think looking at these other formats, which in many cases, for instance, the Japanese game shows, are cheap to produce, is in some ways economically smart. In other ways, if your programming looks cheap and silly, as it does if you schedule wall-to-wall game shows in prime time, you're not spending your summer building a great deal of equity for a fall lineup that you want to sell based on its quality and its writing and its acting. It's very tricky that these networks tend to change personalities in the summer in order to save money. And then, you know, they're surprised when fall comes and people have sort of drifted away from their programming because shows like Mad Men and Burn Notice and The Closer, which really look in a way like network shows, have gotten their attention during the summer. It's a very tough business.
Well, reality TV has become popular with the networks because it is relatively inexpensive, but they've never been particularly respectable, as you say. So what should we make of the fact that Bravo's Project Runway won a Peabody Award this spring?
Well, I guess what we should make of it is that reality TV is no longer in its childhood. I mean, it's been almost 10 years now since CBS really did the last thing that was a total game changer in the history of television, which was launch Survivor and thus launched the whole reality show craze. And there are people now who are really, really skilled at making these shows. I mean, Project Runway at its best is a smart, funny, beautifully produced, innovative show, and there's no reason that reality TV by definition has to be the kind of disreputable, low-end brand of TV that it often actually is. You know, the best of reality TV can be really terrific, but, you know, the format is so kind of self-cannibalizing at this point that it's hard to separate the bad stuff from the good stuff.
So, as you said earlier, we have this traditional network formula of morning chat shows, soaps in the afternoon, sitcoms or dramas at night, talk shows late night. Are the networks uneasy to embrace a new model of scheduling?
I think they're inching toward it even now without admitting that they're inching toward it. I think that networks are going to have to become more ruthless in their scheduling for economic reasons and sort of kill off the weak to save the strong. I mean, we've already seen the networks in the last several years pretty much abandon the idea of seven-night-a-week original programming in prime time. Even during the regular season, Saturday night is now mostly reruns, and there are a number of people who feel that Friday night, when audiences are also low, is next on the chopping block. I do wonder if in the next 4 or 5 years we're going to see networks pare down their daytime original schedules drastically and use those hours to rerun and repurpose and promote the stronger segments of their schedule, their late night shows, their primetime lineup. I mean, there are very good and cheap promotional opportunities to be exploited in daytime if you get rid of your mandate of having to provide original programming virtually around the clock. And I think, you know, broadcast networks are subject to certain restrictions and requirements via the FCC that don't necessarily apply to cable. And I would not be surprised to see in the next few years broadcast networks begin to try to make a case to the government that when everybody has cable, there's really no difference between what a broadcast network should be required to do just because it has an old model of local affiliates and what a cable network should be required to do.
In the old days, a show like All in the Family could start off slow and then grow an audience. Today, it seems the networks are focused on getting instant hits, perhaps because it's so much more expensive. But do you think that attitudes have changed, audience attitudes have changed? If a Seinfeld came along today or Friends, would it become the kind of hit that it was 10 or 15 years ago?
I suspect its audience would be a little smaller, but I think the audience for network TV is certainly capable of creating a hit and sustaining a hit. I think it's people's... I don't want to say people's attention spans are shorter, but I think they're less patient. I think if a show begins to go off the rails creatively early in its run, the way, for instance, Heroes, the NBC show, did in its second season, it's much, much harder for that show to hold on to its audience. Again, when there are so many options, if you don't sustain yourself really well, people will flee and they won't come back because there's too much else to choose from. And it's interesting to look at Friends, because Friends and I guess Everybody Loves Raymond were really the last two kind of blockbuster traditional studio audience situation comedies. And I think it's somewhat alarming to the networks that format, which was for 50 years really the bread and butter of their primetime lineups, just suddenly doesn't seem appealing to people. There are comedies that people really like, you know, The Office, 30 Rock, but the old-fashioned four-camera studio audience sitcom, even network presidents are saying, suddenly it looks phony to me. I have a hard time watching it. It doesn't look right. And it's very scary when something that's worked for decades and decades just suddenly looks stale.
But you talked about attention span, and many people are blaming the internet for the decline in newspapers because of reduced attention spans. You think the same thing is true with TV, facing new media challenges like YouTube, for example, Xbox?
I think it's partly true. There are certainly a lot of people who now watch TV with their laptops in their laps or who use their TV primarily as a game device. But I also think that network executives tend to start invoking the internet and YouTube when they run out of other excuses. People watch TV now. The average household watches TV for 8 hours and 14 minutes a day. That's kind of unspeakable, and it really gives a lie to any suggestion that people are turning away from TV for new media. By contrast, I think they watch just a few minutes of web video on average every day.
Well, 8 hours a day, we should be doing a show on how restaurants are suffering.
I think that's exactly right. So the question is, why aren't they watching those 8 hours more on the networks? You know, I don't think it's just attention span. I think when you have a show that people really love, whether it's American Idol or Lost, they kind of stop what they're doing and pay attention to it. And it's I think what networks are having a hard time finding right now are shows that grab you by the collar and say, look at me. Don't look at your laptop. Don't flip through this magazine. Get off the phone. Stop checking your BlackBerry and just watch.
On the other hand, they also, even if they have successes, they haven't yet figured out how to make money from people who watch on the internet, watch their shows on the internet. TiVo and DVRs have hurt them with advertisers. So I guess they're just going to have to face this brave new world or figure out a way to get around those problems.
Yeah, and I think the question of do you stream your shows for free on the internet in the hope that it builds your audience, or are you just, you know, giving away your only product and asking for nothing in return, is going to be a big issue in the next few years.
Well, so what do you think is going to happen?
Well,
is it going to be an NBC 10 years from now?
Yes, I think there will be an NBC 10 years from now, but I think it may look something more like the NBC group of networks, which includes NBC, but also includes all of the other things that NBC owns, and NBC may just be kind of another stripe in that particular rainbow or peacock spread of feathers or whatever it's called, rather than the biggest or necessarily most important entity.
Mark Harris, who's a columnist for Entertainment Weekly, has written an article called Saving TV in the September issue of Condé Nast Portfolio. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.